So we're continuing in the Upanishads tonight. We've come through the Brihadaranyaka, the Isha, the Kena, the Katha. Great teachings, beautiful, inspiring passages. The Mundaka is one of my favorites. I'll tell you why. When I went to India first, intending to finish my graduate studies rather there than in the United States, it was because I wanted to be able to breathe the air of the Upanishads. And I wanted to be in a place where they would actually be taught. So I went to Banaras Hindu University. And ironically or fortuitously, it was closed. So I immediately wrote for permission to go to the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. My little plan had been to go there on vacations anyway, whenever I could get the time, because in India you can get several weeks at a time, and I wanted to spend every minute that I could in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram. So suddenly, while school was postponed at BHU, I could write for permission to go down to the ashram. So I did. I got permission. I went there. I had introductions to some of the great intellectuals in the Sri Aurobindo Ashram, Katie Setna and Arundam Basu. But I had the God-given opportunity to meet M.P. Pundit. And I'll shorten this story because we only have a few minutes tonight. But he permitted me to come to the satsangs in his house in the evening, which occurred at 6:30. And to my delight, he announced one evening that he was going to take up the study of the Mundaka Upanishad. And if you can imagine, Pandaji kept a very simple place. It was a house where great tapasya had been done, not only by himself, but also by Sri T.V. Kapali Shastri, a great yogi in any tradition, and who had taught Madhav how to live, how to study, how to act in the world. And so there was a kind of tradition being built up there, reaching back to the age of the Tantras, back to the age of the Upanishads. Indeed, one of the best books that you can read as a study on the Upanishads is Kapali Shastriya's Lights on the Upanishads. Madhav must have been an oceanic reservoir, because when he sat in the evening, you felt as if millenniums fell away, and you were sitting in the very presence of an Upanishadic sage in his forest hermitage. And as he began to speak, truth after truth after truth rolled out. It was wonderful, because it was timeless. It might have been in the 20th century, but this is the teaching whispered from the guru to the shishya over millenniums. And very casually, without ceremony, just so. This might have been the very book that I had in Pandaji's household. I think it was, because I have this bookmark in it, which I got when I was first in the ashram. So, to the Mundaka. I guess it deserves a few prefatory words. The Mundaka is not one of the earliest Upanishads, but it's at least a century or two ahead of the arrival, the advent of Buddha on the scene in India. Mundaka belongs to the Atharva Veda. Atharva was a rishi who was known for his fire sacrifice and apparently was efficacious because the whole of the fourth Veda, the Atharva Veda, is ascribed to him, comes under his family, under his watch. Mundaka as a word could mean who carries fire on the head, as if you're carrying it to a ceremony, to a ritual that's about to begin. More likely, it means one whose head has been shaved. So the shaved one. Illustrating and suggesting to some that there was a tradition of renunciation taking hold of the Indian mind by this year when this came into being. So many want to see the beginnings of the sannyasa tradition in the Mundaka Upanishad. Really, the sannyasa tradition, which renounces self and family and hearth and home. Let us see how true that is. The opening verses give us a kind of lineage of how these great teachings come to earth. Brahma, first of the gods, was born, the creator of all. In an earlier time, he would have been called Prajapati. You remember when we were studying the Veda? But now he's known as Brahma, the world's protector. He, through Atharvan, his eldest son, declared the God knowledge in which all sciences have their foundation. So the first, the most important science is Brahma Vidya, the science of the Brahman. This God knowledge by Brahman declared to Atharvan, Atharvan of old declared to Angir. He to Satyavaha, the Bharadwaja, told it, the Bharadwaja to Angiras, both the higher and the lower knowledge. So Shalaka, the great house lord, came to Angiras in the due course of things as a disciple and asked, Lord, by knowing what does all this that is become known? This is a question that we've heard before. This we heard in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad also. To him, Angiras spoke, twofold is the knowledge that must be known, of which the knowers of the Brahman tell, the higher, para, and the lower knowledge, apara, of which the lower, the Rig Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, and the Atharva Veda. Chanting, ritual, grammar, etymological interpretation, prosody, astronomy. And then the higher, by which is known the immutable. So what? He just said that all the Vedas, the bodies of knowledge gathered in these four great collections or samhitas, are the lower knowledge. But it's this lower knowledge that all of society has been built upon. The conduct of the ritual, the offering of the sacrifice establishes and brings into being the harmonious process of the world. But this is the lower knowledge? Knowing how to bring the world into creation, knowing how to establish prosperity and life upon earth, this is the lower knowledge? Yes. That, the invisible, that, the unseizable, without connections, without hue, without eye or ear, that which is without hands or feet, eternal, pervasive, which is in all things, and impalpable. You cannot touch it, which is imperishable. You cannot kill it. You cannot bring it into being. That which is the womb, the yoni of creatures, sages behold everywhere. This thing that you can't see can be seen everywhere by the sages whose inner eye has been opened. As the spider puts out and gathers in, as herbs spring up, as hair of head and body grow from a living man, so here all is born from the immutable. Brahman grows by his energy at work, and then from him is matter born, and out of matter, prana, life, and mind, manas, and truth, satya, and the worlds, and in works, immortality. So through doing works in the world, one secures immortality? Is this renunciation? Is this sannyasa? On the contrary, this is celebrating the universe as the place where Brahman lives. But not to the surface view, to the deep view. The Rishi sees this, who is omniscient, who is all-wise, whose energy is made of knowledge. From him is born this, that is Brahman here. This nama rupa, name and form, this matter. This is that, the truth of things. Works which the sages saw in the mantras, manifoldly extended. Do your works religiously with one passion for the truth, and this is your road to the heaven of good deeds. The heaven of good deeds? When the fire of sacrifice is kindled and the flame sways and quivers, then between the double pourings of ghee, cast therein with faith, Shraddha, your offerings. For he whose altar fires are empty of the new moon offering and the full moon offering, and the offering of the rains and the offering of the first fruits, or unfed, or fed without right ritual, or without guests, or without the dues to the Vishvadevas, destroys his hope of all the seven worlds. So for one who fails to conduct the sacrifice, none of the goodness spread by Brahman throughout the seven planes of the universe are accessible. He goes on. To say, ironically, about these fires of sacrifice. Come with us, come with us, they cry to him, these luminous fires of sacrifice. And they bear him by the rays of the sun, speaking to him pleasant words of sweetness, doing him homage. This is your holy world of Brahman and the heaven of your righteousness. So you have offered the sacrifice. And the results are that you are going up this staircase to this heavenly world. You're getting the fruit of your offering. And Atharvan is giving this teaching. He is the master of the fire sacrifice. But wait, he says, but frail are the ships of sacrifice. Frail, these forms of sacrifice, all 18 of them, in which are declared the lower works, fools are they who hail them as the highest good, and they come yet again to this world of age and death. They who dwell within the ignorance, and they hold themselves for learned men, thinking, we, even we, are the wise and the sages. They are fools, and they wander around, beaten and stumbling like blind men led by the blind. We saw that passage in the Katha Upanishad last week. They dwell in many bonds of the ignorance, children thinking. We have achieved our aim of paradise. But when the men of works are held by their affections and arrive not at the knowledge, when they are overtaken by anguish, then their paradise wastes by enjoying, and they fall from their heavens. So this punya, this goodness that comes to you because you have done this work, you go to this heavenly abode and you spend it again and again and again until finally all the goodness of your past deeds, of your sacrifices, are burned up and again you come back. So what have you gained? You've gained a heaven, but you have not gained something greater. Minds bewildered, who hold the oblation offered and the well dug for the greatest righteousness and know not any other highest good, on the back of heaven they enjoy the world won by their righteousness and enter again this or even a lower world. So we saw the idea of punarjanman, birth again, enunciated in the Brihadaranyaka. And now again, this idea of rebirth is broadcast to us. Not that rebirth is itself a curse. No, this is not what the Upanishad is saying. It is saying, though, that if you just follow the normal course of things, you enjoy the desert of your good work, you suffer the demerit of your bad, and you just stay on the wheel. That's all. But there's a greater knowledge that you can get to. Why? Because Brahman is everywhere and the secret is buried in things. But they, he says, who in the forest, in other words, come to me, the guru in the forest, follow after faith and self-discipline, Shraddha and Tapas, calm and full of knowledge, Shanta, Vijnana, living upon alms, cast from them the dust of their passions, and through the gate of the sun. Remember what the sun represents in the Veda? That golden sphere of truth beyond the manifest triple world that we inhabit? Through the gate of the sun, they pass on there where is the immortal, the spirit, the self, undecaying, imperishable. So the seeker of the Brahman, having put to the test the worlds piled up by works, arrives at world distaste, for not by work done is reached he who is uncreated. For the knowledge of that, let him approach fuel in hand, a guru, one who is learned in the Veda and is devoted to contemplation of the Brahman. So he has the lower knowledge and he has the higher knowledge. He has studied the Veda. He knows how those ships of sacrifice are built that take you to that heaven. He knows how the bricks are constructed that bring this world into being, but he knows the greater truth beyond as well. Not one or the other, but both and. To him, because he has taken entire refuge with him, with a heart tranquilized and a spirit at peace, that man of knowledge declares in its principles the science of the Brahman, Brahmavidya, by which one comes to know the Atman, the true, the real. And then we begin the second section. He's given you the first glimpse. Now he says, this is that, the truth of things. As from one high kindled fire, thousands of different sparks are born, and all have the same form of fire. So, O fair sun, from the immutable, manifold becomings are born, and even into that they depart. soul, there is this central fire that throws out sparks. This Brahman, which is immutable and transcendent, throws out these sparks, which are defined, they're individual. They fly out into space, they fly out into relative darkness, but they are brought back. They don't just stay out and fall and are extinguished, they come back into the fire again and again. So journey after journey is made. That fire is the soul force in the individual. So we've seen the Upanishad affirm the universe. We've seen the Upanishad call us beyond the universe to the transcendent, and now it is saying from that transcendent, you are born. You come into the world. In fact, all becomings that are becomings come from this great fire. So, what is obvious is that we're all connected. We all share the same birthright. One is as good as another. One grows, one lags behind. It's up to the individual, isn't it? But none is superior in essence to any other. In essence, all are the same. So, He, the Divine, this formless spirit, is the outward and the inward and the unborn. So, He's all this manifest universe that glitters and glows. He's all the psychological worlds inside us, and He is that unborn thing of which our spark is a representation, in which we are also. That is what is transcendent. Transcends because it's beyond the measure of space. It's beyond the measure of time. This is the supreme, beyond the immutable. So life and mind and senses are born from Him. And the sky and the wind, the light, the waters, the earth, upholding all that is. And then here's a wonderful verse. It'll be expanded upon in the Bhagavad Gita, which we'll be turning to quite soon. Fire is the head of him, and his eyes are the sun and moon, the quarters, his organs of hearing, and the revealed Vedas are his voice. Air is his breath, the universe is his heart, earth lies at his feet. He is the inner self in all beings. Now, that idea of the Vishwarupa, of the universal form of the divine, has found its way into Indian art over the decades. And you can see here this blue body of Vishnu. His right eye is the sun, his left eye is the moon, and the quarters are his organs of hearing, the Vedas are his voice, the air is his breath. Let me show this to our friends who are with us on Zoom, see if they can see it for a moment too. I think we can pass that around the room, you can see. So, an affirmation, again, that the divine has become this world, exists within it. From him is fire, of which the sun is the fuel. Then rain from the soma, herbs upon the earth, and the male casts his seed into the woman. Thus are these many peoples born from the spirit. So there is a staircase of consciousness from the gods, their realm, all the way down to the earth and the procreative activities of humans and all beings here. Everything is connected. Everything is a field of goodness. Everything is a field of wonder. Nothing to be rejected here. But you want to get to that consummate knowledge. You want to get to that supreme knowledge so that all is plain to you, so that the mystery of life does not baffle or disturb or make you despair. Rather, you can take true, full enjoyment in it. From him, the the hymns of the Rig Veda. See, back again. Up there, we've caught that imperishable. Now we're coming back and establishing, re-establishing the values of the Vedic tradition. From him, the hymns of the Rig Veda, the Sama, the Yajur, initiation, Diksha, all sacrifices, works of sacrifice, dues given, the year and its cycling, the giver of the sacrifice, Yajamana, and the worlds on which the moon shines and the sun. From him have issued many gods, demigods, yakshas, men, beasts, birds, the main breath and the downward breath. Later important, when Hatha Yoga develops a couple of thousand years after this, rice, barley, tapas, shraddha, satya, brahmacharya, and the rule of right practice. The seven breaths, that which sustain the seven worlds, and the seven lights, and the kinds of fuel, and the seven oblations, because all these worlds offer back to the divine, because the sacrifice, in a sense, is repaid by who inhabits and invests himself in us. When we live in the world, in a sense, our offering back to him justifies the circling around of these energies. That gives to us, we give to that. And so there is a communion, there is an exchange, there is a kind of divine commerce. And this is all set within the secret heart. Seven and seven. There is a dwelling place in us where all this exists. From him are the oceans, all these mountains, and from him flow the rivers of all forms. From him are born all plants. Sensible delight, which makes the soul to abide with the material elements. Brahman is all this universe. He is works, karma. He is tapas, the hard work of effort. The Brahman, supreme, immortal. Samya, dear one, he who knows this as hidden in the secret heart, scatters even here in this world the knot of the ignorance. This idea of a jivan mukti, of one who has achieved liberation even in this world, comes back to us here. And so he continues right on. That chapter ends, the next chapter begins with the same point, manifested. It is here, set close within, moving in the secret heart. This is the mighty foundation, and into it is consigned all that moves, all that breathes and sees. This is that great foundation here. Know it as the is and is not, the supremely desirable, greatest, most high, beyond the knowledge of creatures. That which is luminous, but smaller than the atoms. That in which are set the worlds and their peoples, because it's that great and vast. That is this. It is Brahman, immutable. Life is that. It is speech and mind. That is this, the true and real. It is that which is immortal. It is into that that you must pierce, Samya. Into that, penetrate. The verb here is vidhi. It means both to penetrate, as a pin would go into a pound of butter. It also means to know. So you've got to penetrate that with your being, with your conscious being, and understand it through identity. You can't know it as an object. It's not something external. You can't understand it as you would understand with the sense mind. You can, in a sense, stand under it by becoming that and thus understand it. Here's one of the great passages in the Mundaka. Take up this great bow of the Upanishad, that mighty weapon, Mahāstram. Set to it an arrow sharpened by adoration, by meditation. Draw the bow with a heart devoted to that contemplation. Penetrate into that as into a target, even into the immutable. Om is the bow. So he's told you what to do, and now he's telling you more specifically how to do it. Use Om as the bow, your soul as the arrow, and that, Brahman, is spoken of as the target, Lakshyam. That must be pierced with an unfaltering aim. One must be absorbed into that as an arrow is lost in its target. Om. We'll come to Om shortly. Om begins every mantra. Om begins the universe. And the universe begins with a divine mantra, Om. Where the nerves are brought together like the spokes in the nave of a chariot wheel, this is he that moves within. There is he manifoldly born. Meditate on the self as Om, and happy be your passage to the other shore beyond the darkness. The omniscient, the all-wise, whose is this might and majesty upon the earth? Is this self enthroned in the divine city of the Brahman, in his ethereal heaven, Vyoma? That is the vast world of the supramental. A mental being, leader of the life and body, has set a heart in matter. In matter, he has taken his firm foundation. By its knowing, the wise see everywhere around them that which shines in its effulgence, a shape of bliss and immortal. When you see that, grief is gone. Doubts are cut away. In a supreme golden sheath, the Brahman lies, stainless, without parts. Splendorous is that. It is the light of lights. It is that which the self-knowers know. There the sun shines not, and the moon has no splendor, and the stars are blind. There these lightnings flash not. How then shall burn this earthly fire? All that shines is but the shadow of his shining. All this universe is effulgent with his light. So beyond this is the realm of the true immortal. This is the universe, divinely conceived, but measurable. It has its name, it has its form. Beyond that is the unknowable divine. What is unmanifest? In that highest heaven, in that golden sphere, all this is Brahman immortal, nothing else. Brahman in front of us. Brahman behind us, to the south of us, to the north of us, below us, above us. It stretches everywhere. All this is Brahman alone, all this universe. You may think that we're going slowly, but we've come to one of the great passages again in the Mundaka, which is akin to what we see in the Katha, and which will again appear before us in the Bhagavad Gita. And it comes from the Rig Veda. It's one of the great images in spiritual literature. Two birds, beautiful of wing, close companions, cling to a common tree. Of the two, one eats the sweet fruit of the tree. The other eats not, but watches his fellow. The soul that is the bird that sits immersed on the one common tree, because he is not Lord, is bewildered and has sorrow. But when he sees that other who is the Lord and beloved, he knows that all this is his greatness, and his sorrow passes away from him. This is your situation. Facing outward, looking at the sweet and the bitter fruit of the universe, you begin to think you're just this small bird. You don't know which fruit to bite. You don't know how to act. You don't know which limb is your real home. You don't know who you are. But when something calls your attention up and you see that higher bird looking down at you, you realize that is your real self. You're always that. Unmanifest, watching, superior to all that occurs in the world. And yet you are also this small bird, tasting the fruit here, tasting the fruit there, jumping from branch to branch. And when you know that you're both, your sorrow falls away from you. Now you can live. When a seer sees the golden hued, the maker, the Lord, the spirit who is the source of Brahman, then he becomes the knower and shakes from his wings, bird-like, sin and virtue. Pure of all stain, he reaches the supreme identity. We need virtue as we move unenlightened through the world. If we don't have ethics to guide us, we live the life of a less enlightened beast. But there comes that point where the greater knowledge calls us beyond the world of virtue, beyond the right and the wrong, performing the ritual just so, making sure we have the Vedic bricks lined up correctly, making sure we offer in the right season, etc., because that is not the ultimate truth. It sends us to a heaven, but it is itself a perishable heaven. And we come from an imperishable origin. And to recover that state of consciousness and being is our real aim. So this is the life in things that shines manifested by all these beings. A man of knowledge coming wholly to know this draws back from creeds, too many disputes. The self is his delight. At play in the self and doing works, the best is he among the knowers of Brahman. So the self can always be won by truth, satya, by self-discipline, tapasya, by an integral knowledge, by a life of purity. The self that is in the inner body, radiant, made all of light, whom, by the perishing of their blemishes, the doers of this tapas behold. So work hard, cling to truth, as Mother used to say. Cling to truth. Apply yourself. Work vigorously. Satyam eva jayate anritam In other words, verily, it is truth that conquers, and not disordering falsehood. Truth wins. Be true. By truth was stretched out the path of the journey of the gods. In other words, what they are doing in the world is to establish truth here in the universe, in the manifest universe, by which the sages, winning their desire, ascend where the truth has its supreme abode. So, affirm the world. Work hard in the world with your consciousness fired by that bow of the great Upanishad. Om, and arrive at that target. The Mundaka says, vast is that, divine, its form unthinkable. It shines out subtler than the subtle, very far and farther than farness. It is here close to us. For those who have vision, it is even here in this world. It is here, hidden in the secret heart. Eye cannot seize, speech cannot grasp, nor these other godheads can lay hold on him. Not by austerity can he be held, nor by works. Work hard, practice austerity. It's not enough. Only when the inner being is purified by a glad serenity of knowledge, then indeed, meditating, one beholds the Spirit, indivisible, like we saw in the Katha Upanishad, a kindred verse. This self is subtle and has to be known by a mind in which the life force has made its fivefold entry. In other words, you have got to become master of your life energies, and you have to fuel the bodily life into the mind stuff and make it all integrated, make it all of a whole piece. All the conscious heart of creatures is shot through and inwoven with the currents of the life force, and only when it is purified can this self manifest its power. So it is not by discarding the body, discarding the life force, that we gain access to that. It is by leading all of it to the fullest expression, to the finest state, that we achieve it. Whatever world the man whose inner being is purified sheds the light of his mind upon, and whatsoever desires he cherishes, that world he takes by conquest, and those desires, too. Then let whosoever seeks for success and well-being approach with homage a self-knower. He knows this Supreme Brahman as the highest abiding place in which shines out, inset, the radiant world. The wise who are without desire and worship see the Spirit pass beyond this. He who cherishes desires and his mind dwells with his longings is by his desires born again, wherever they lead him. But the man who has won all his desire and found his soul, for him, even here in this world, vanish away all desires. Because if you are enjoying the enjoyment of the universal being, because you're identified with him, what desire is there for you? There is no object for which you hanker, because you see that universal fire with its tongue of flame licking it all up as an offering to that. This self is not won by study. It is not won by thought power. not by much learning. Only by him whom it chooses can it be won. To him the self unveils its own body, as we saw in the Katha Upanishad. You can put yourself in a state of readiness. Your tapasya can render you capable of that. You make your mind quiet. You purify your life energies. Make the body stable, plastic, itself a seat of peace. And then you wait. And when that grace comes, because you've created in yourself a state of grace, there can be that awakening to that self. And you say, oh. And the self cannot be won by any who is without strength. So if you're weak, develop strength. Nor with error in the seeking. If you find error in yourself, straighten it out. Nor by an effort without a true mark. You can't do this because you want dominion over the divine. It is an attitude of surrender that one should cultivate. But when a man of knowledge strives by these means, his self enters into Brahman, his abiding place. Attaining to him, seers glad with fullness of knowledge, perfected in the self, all passions cast from them, tranquilized, these, the wise, come to the all-pervading from every side, and uniting themselves with him, enter utterly the all. These tapaswins who have made sure of the aim of the whole knowledge of Vedanta, the inner being purified by the yoga of renunciation, sannyasa, in other words, renouncing the small self for the great self. Again, saying yes to the universe, yes to life, doing all the works. What is being renounced is the ego and its claim. Because it is a practice of yoga, and yoga here means of restraint. All, in the hour of their last end, passing beyond death, are released into the worlds of the Brahman. So if it is immortality that you're seeking, it is this that takes you there. If what you want is not to be bound by the limits of death and life and death, and to know only the outer surface of the universe, but you want to live for the Supreme Being itself, this is the manner by which you get there. All the parts return to their foundations, and all the all the gods pass into their proper godheads. Works, the self of knowledge, all become one in the supreme and imperishable. In other words, the constituent parts of our being go back into their normal places. Your little life is merged in the great oceanic prana. Your little mind is spread wide in that vast sky of the mind. Your physical body becomes one with the earth again. As rivers in their flowing reach their home in the ocean and cast off their names and forms, even so one who knows is delivered from name and form and reaches the Supreme beyond the Most High, even the Divine Person. He who knows that Supreme Brahman becomes himself Brahman. By becoming aware of it, you become that. In his lineage, none is born who knows not the Brahman. He crosses beyond sorrow, beyond sin, delivered from the knotted cord of the secret heart, and becomes immortal. Unravels that which binds us to our small emotions. The thought that we are this when we are really that. This is that which is declared by the Rig Veda. Doers of work, versed in the Veda, men absorbed in the Brahman, who, putting their faith in the soul seer, offer themselves to him sacrifice. To them one should speak this Brahman knowledge. Men by whom the vow of the head, Mundaka, has been done according to the rite. This is that, the truth of things, which the seer Angiras spoke of old. This none learns who has not performed the vow of the head. Salutation to the seers supreme. Salutation to the seers supreme. So this was a school of initiation in this forest hermitage. It seemed as if it would be the place you would go to learn about how the sacrificial fire works, but it took the seeker beyond the sacrificial fire. So have you energy for another couple? I think we've already run our hour, haven't we? I wanted to talk about the Mandukya Upanishad and the Shvetashvatara. Well, let me say briefly, if I may, about the Mandukya, that this is that Upanishad. It's the shortest there is, which speaks about Om, and that there are four states in Om, each of which matches a letter of its spelling. The A, U, M, and the drone above are the four letters. The A represents this broad physical universe, this vast universe that we know with our hands, with our senses, with our minds. There is another universe above that, represented by the letter U, and that is the world of the dream, of the conceptive consciousness of the divine, who dreams the world into being, which manifests in this body. But above that is a higher world, represented by the letter M. And this M is a world of dreamless sleep. It is the consciousness of the self, which is beyond cognition, which is beyond form, of which this creative dream consciousness is a manifestation, which itself manifests in the world. A-U-M. But there is a fourth, a Turiya, which is beyond the timeless, beyond that silent knowledge. And it is inexpressible and undefinable and includes all these states, the dreamless, the dream, and the waking. All these are states of its being. The Mandukya does not declare that the world is unreal, but it declares that there is a supreme which is unnameable, ungraspable. If I could have a word about the Shvetashvatara, the last two Upanishads that we looked at, the Mundaka and the Mandukya, both belong to the Atharva Veda. The Shvetashvatara, which means the whitest of horses, in other words, the purest of life energies. He has completely conquered the galloping life energy to become a sage. The Shvetashvatara Upanishad is the Upanishad which begins to speak quite definitely of a Maheshwara, of one who is Shiva. And Shiva is a word that means auspicious. It's a word that means kindly. It also refers to that deity who in mythology they see sitting on the highest heights of the Himalayas. So that deity is the one who is intoned. So it is the only of the great Upanishads which speaks directly of a personal divine. The others make reference to Godheads here and there, but when they speak about that experience which leads one beyond death into immortality, beyond pain and suffering, into delight and bliss, that is determined as only Brahman, a neutral, which is beyond either gender, which is impossible to capture in a form. So I'm sorry we didn't have time to get into that more. It would have been a great thing to do. And maybe we'll have an occasion where we can. We have had to skip through so many of the great chapters and incidents that occur throughout the Upanishads. I think it might be worth having a night somewhere in the middle of a week sometime where we just talk about the stories of the Upanishads. Those that we didn't describe before, we can describe then. So these Upanishads that we've looked at, we can see, place great emphasis on the lifting up of the human soul to a state of immortality by identifying it with the universal spirit. And this spirit is not merely universal, it is also transcendent. We can see every step of the way that it affirms that here in the secret place of the heart, there is an immortal being, and that is you. If you look abroad into the world, all the creatures of the world, the birds with their feathers, the gods in their heavens, all this is the manifestation of Brahman. And yet that Brahman cannot be captured by any of this. It's also beyond. We've seen the big picture in the Isha Upanishad, expressing that all this world is for the habitation of the divine. We've seen the Kena Upanishad say, look at your mind as it quests for knowledge. What does it know? Does it get to the seer behind what is seen, the thinker behind what is thought? Does it get to that Brahman? We've seen in the Katha that Nachiketas is led to a knowledge of his own immortality, of how the world is constructed, and then beyond that, into the immortality of Brahman, of the divine. We've just seen tonight in the Mundaka, the selfsame thing enunciated. We have seen that also in what we've touched upon in the Mandukya and the Shvetashvatra. So the Upanishads each stress a different kind of teaching, and they arrive at this truth in different ways. They don't all have the same methods. The different vidyas enunciated in the Brihadaranyaka or the Chandogya are distinct from those that we find in the Mundaka. But they all lead to this reality of Brahman. And what is that? We must determine with great focus. We must make that our supreme aim of life. This is a different aim of life than we saw in the Veda. So we've moved from one goal of life in the origination of the Rig Vedic society to a maturation and in a way a deepening of Indian spiritual tradition when we reach the Upanishad. And next week we'll move into or somewhat into the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita. So, Any questions? Have I worn you out?